Today's Journey to Wellness in Indian Country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth Campus, educating medical students dedicated to serving rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities. Award-winning writer Linda Hogan is a Chickasaw poet, novelist, and essayist. She's written quite a bit about the natural world and indigenous perspectives on nature and knowing. She'll present a reading from her recent works, the book The Radiant Lives of Animals, and a poetry collection called A History of Kindness, tomorrow, Tuesday, April 20th, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. She will also talk with Linda Grover, UMD Professor of American Indian Studies, in a conversation about writing and indigenous thought. Linda Hogan joined me for a Zoom interview a week or so ago, and in between long digressions to talk about horses and dogs, she shared her thoughts about the animals with whom we share our world.
I'm mostly concentrating on how we redefine ourselves in relationship with everything else, with animals, non-human animals, with the rest of the world, with the planet, with, is there really an I or is it a we?
We've talked a lot about food and about native food and local food and traditional food. But reading your book was the first time that there was a conversation about our relationship with non-human animals. Talk about that a little bit, about why it's important and if there's a way that you can characterize that relationship.
I don't know if it was my early life or what, but my entire life has been devoted to non-human animals and plants. I know that food sovereignty is the big thing right now. And especially you're in Minnesota and Winona LaDuke is up there working a lot on food sovereignty and Rowan White comes by and, you know, that's all really wonderful, except that then you go to a powwow and eat fry bread, which is one of the worst things you could ever possibly eat. And it's from the days of starvation when that's all we had was flour and grease or lard. And so we learned how to cook that, but most people that are traditional wouldn't ever eat it. For us, coming from the Southeast, our diets were vastly different. Anyway, my family understood that I was like that. And I think my grandmother, I was with my grandmother and I loved her very much. She was my person in life. With her, she also was an animal person and she would talk to the animals and they would listen to her. She had lived with a giant land tortoise around. And if it would start to go beyond a certain distance, she'd say, "You have to watch out for the dogs," and it would turn around and come back. And then my father always had turtles and all kinds of animals around. And I just came from a group of people that helped animals and cared about them. Then I was a rehabber for years until it got to be too much for me. I think I've just been this way all my life. I was born like that. And some people are born with different qualities and they just have a different way of being and a different way of living. Well, I also really respect plants, but there are people who spend their life thinking about plants and never once give a thought to the animals. And I'm thinking in terms of an entire system, an ecosystem, where the plants and the animals are one thing together. They really couldn't live without each other. And so I try to now see the entire pictures, the whole system and how it works together. We were forest and river people originally, and we took very good care of the forests, so that when DeSoto arrived, his first comment was on the forests, and then second comment was on the agriculture. And then, of course, the third was on how to use the people here.
Many people have adopted animals and brought animals into their homes during this time of pandemic. Talk a little bit about how animals can be so good for us. And then I'm curious if the kinds of relationships that we have with our companion animals, if that is the same kind of relationship or a similar kind of relationship that we could have with wild animals and with animals that we don't know personally, the way we do the animals with whom we share our homes.
I think that our domestic animals are domestic animals, and that the animals who live in the wild have their own lives and their own relationships with one another, with other animal life, with their diets being natural for them. We don't want them as pets. When you take in an animal that's a domestic animal, a dog or a cat, you really have an obligation to that animal. You have made a promise to them for life, yours or theirs. And you don't just take them in and then give them up. And you don't treat them well and then stop treating them well. We also have an obligation to wildlife, which is to let it continue to live in its own world. And should our paths cross, we find ourselves very fortunate, but it must be temporary unless they are injured. And we have taken them on in some way as a rehabilitator or in some other manner. In my book, The Radiant Lives of Animals, I talk about being stranded with an elk for a period of time because of having 12-foot snowdrifts, and how we had to make our peace with one another that we were stuck together. And it worked out really well, but it could have ended very badly. It could have become accustomed to humans and then therefore been easy prey, or it could have killed me with its antlers, which were very large. And neither one of those things happened, but I was always aware of it. And I'm sure the elk always was too, because it always clicked its teeth when I was around to make sure that I knew that it was powerful. They are equal to us. They are like humans, only in a different form. They have sometimes extremely complex languages. Prairie dogs, for instance, have a language that researchers discovered years ago. We've always recognized that, and the people that I know in the community that I've been with, we really recognize the equality of the animals to us. But they are not, it does not mean that if one comes to look at us or comes close to us, that we are somehow special with God-given something that is miraculously ours. It's just that they have the same curiosity about us that we have about them. Back to prairie dogs, they are a keystone species. And when I drive by a place that's going in as a development, and I see the destruction to the prairie dog villages and to their homelands, I think, well, there goes the water in that area. There goes a number of animals that would have lived there because they live off of the prairie dogs. They eat them. Burrowing owls eat them. Coyotes, wolves, all kinds of animals. And so they are significant. And the Navajo say that they call down the rain. But the thing is that it is true that water attracts water. What they build underneath the ground goes towards the aquifer. There are so many things to know about prairie dogs that we can't even begin to understand. And that is also true of every animal I've ever studied, every non-human animal. I can't even imagine knowing my own sister very well and how she thinks. So how could I pretend to know what an animal is thinking? But we do not know what's inside other people, let alone what's inside animals. But we do know that they're intelligent, and their intelligence is equal to ours, only different. And that together we make a whole, we make an entirety on this planet.
The words of Linda Hogan here this morning on 103.3 KUMD. And we will get some information up on our website so that you can register to attend her talk tomorrow afternoon from 3 to 4.30 via Zoom. She'll be doing a reading from a couple of her recent works, The Radiant Lives of Animals, on a book, and A History of Kindness, a collection of poetry. Today's journey to wellness in Indian country is made possible by the University of Minnesota Medical School Duluth campus, a national leader in improving healthcare access and outcomes in rural Minnesota and American Indian, Alaska Native communities.